I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I wanna drive.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, just got about 11 minutes left in today's trading session, and we have stocks we're seeing buying into the close, as Charlie mentioned, up more than 7% on the NASDAQ. We've got about a 5.3% gain on the S&P 500. And Paul, I mean, it is broad-based, all in.
It is. I mean, the NASDAQ is just amazing. But we've been buying them into the close here, so we've seen some strength in trading.
Yeah, pretty significant. All right, let's get to it. Let's see what Doug Cioka has to say. He is CEO and partner at Kavar Capital Partners. They've got over $1 billion in assets under management based in Leawood, Kansas. That's where we find him joining us via Zoom. All right, Doug Cioka, how are you?
I'm great. How are you? Thank you for having me on.
Doing well.
With his Notre Dame shirt on today. I mean, these Notre Dame people, you can't, they wear the Notre Dame stuff everywhere.
All in.
With a name like Paul Sweeney, you cannot object.
You're exactly right.
You guys are cute. So, interesting day, to say the least. Yields backing off. A tremendous rally. I can't remember the last day I saw such a buy-in into the equity trade. Doug, is this it? Have we bottomed out when it comes to stocks and topped out when it comes to yields?
That's obviously a $64,000 question. It is incredible, actually, Carol, to see the Bloomberg Barclays Ag now. I think this is going to be the best day it's had a single day performance since 1982. Hmm. What's amazing is the bond rally, the stock rally, the incredible decline of the dollar, and yet the Bloomberg Financial Conditions Index in the United States is actually tightening. And I don't know if the Fed would take this as all very positive news, but could this be the peak in CPI, maybe for the core, yet to be seen yet for the headline, but yet to be seen for the core. But certainly, I think a nicely motivating factor as far as taking some of the worst case scenarios off the table.
So, I mean, I'm not sure if this is just a technical short squeeze or we've got real and long-term investors buying in here, or if this is a trade. I'm not really sure, but it's clear that, to the extent anybody wasn't paying attention, this is a market that's paying close attention to the Federal Reserve, just as the Federal Reserve is paying close attention to inflation. But it's not so much earnings. It's just, what's this Fed going to do? And I guess the market's telling us today, we think we're maybe, if we're not at the peak, we're close to it.
Well, it's interesting, right? So you had kind of the Powell switcheroo last week, Paul, and you had a very dovish, or at least largely dovish statement, and then a very hawkish press conference. And then we had a couple of the Fed governors when they hit the media circuit post press conference. And they were a little bit mixed. I mean, Mary Daly seems to be reasonably dovish. And of course, Bullard and Kashkari are more hawkish. And then Loretta Mester today, who is set up to maybe throw some cold water on the rally, came out with four or five headlines around Bloomberg that probably could be interpreted as her most dovish interpretation of the new data. So if they're actually seeing, right, this long and variable lag making its way into the data, I don't know why you would need to throw fuel on the fire. And it's reflected in the reduction in the terminal rate. So the market is trying to price in what it thinks is going to be the next couple moves. And they're by no means done. And I think there's a major difference between a pivot and a pause. But when they say in the press conference, we're nowhere near considering pausing. I don't know mathematically how that is the case. If you already raised rates by 400 basis points, you're not going to raise them by 800. You certainly are past that inflection point where at least would be something that you would have to consider in future meetings.
All right. So I'm trying to translate that. Does that mean, Doug, you think we're overdone here, certainly on the equity trade, that we're just too amped up here?
No, not, by no means. I certainly see that there's, whether it's short covering relief rally, I do think, like anything, there was an elevation of a liquidity concern given what's taken place in the crypto complex in the last 48 hours. I think a little reprieve if the Fed isn't going to be taking additional liquidity out of the system because of the cooling off on some of the inflation data. I think that the market is trying to find some level ground, but more than anything, you're chasing out shorts pretty quickly today. But the question always becomes, like, is this just another bear market rally? And is someone in your program a couple weeks ago had said, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but they all look the same right at the beginning. And so the question just becomes, are we at a point where the Fed is not going to end the rally by talking down any optimism by very harsh, hawkish language? If you think what ended the bear market bump that took place in July and August, it was Powell and Jackson Hole. If you think what ended the bear market pop 2 weeks ago, it's when the Fed came out at the press conference. So if the Fed now, in the Red Investor being one of the head hawks, is talking a little less strongly, the market might take that as a higher probability that this may not be a bear market bounce, but something start of a next leg of a bull market.
Doug, if it is somewhat along that scenario that maybe, you know, the Fed is starting to taper here, it's increases, where are you suggesting folks go in this market?
Yeah, great question, Paul. I mean, I think within the equity realm, we still think defensive product sectors make sense. Healthcare, staples, some industrials, but they need to sell at low multiples, right? You're not going to get multiple expansion in a high interest rate, low growth environment. They need to have super clean balance sheets, and to the degree they can, self-sufficiency in sourcing products. Okay, so we still think, right, the equity market has largely been resilient, even though the average stock is down, what, 25-30% from its peak. There's been a lot of damage that's been done to really good companies that have been thrown at it indiscriminately and treated like very poor stocks. So there's opportunity, particularly in those three sectors. But in fixed income is likely where we're most excited, right? It's interesting when Powell talks about needing to establish positive real yields. They're there, right? 3, 5, 7, 9, 15 years out, they are positive real yields based upon the 5-year forward on the breakevens for these TIPS. So if you think about, right, everyone talks about guilt by association,
right,
collateral damage when certain classes of assets become impaired. But there's also a rising tide component. When all aspects of an asset class become more attractive due purely to their spread over the risk-free treasury, and this is fixed income. And at times like this, some of these companies actually have better balance sheets, not being cynical, than the federal government, that are offering yield premiums at 300, 400, and 500 basis points above.
How much of do you think the move today that we're seeing is because the dollar has backed off? I'm looking at the dollar index. It's down about 2.3%. And that has certainly been troubling for the profit picture. We've heard that from a lot of CEOs.
Yeah, I think it's a large part of it, Carol. There's no question. I mean, with everyone that came down to your point, the CEOs coming to the quarterly confessional and saying, we read a couple of the companies we covered this morning, said the same thing, right? We have to be a little bit cautious in our revenue projections just because of the headwind of FX. Now, if that gets into the multiple and that starts to abate, then you're going to have upward surprises in the out quarters. But there's no question, Carol, you hit on one of the primary catalysts for today's move.
Hey, Doug, you're in the burbs of Kansas City there. How's the economy out there?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty strong. It's pretty resilient. One of the great things about, I mean, I'm in southern Johnson County in Kansas, but the whole sort of broad KC area, we have a very diverse revenue base, right? There are not two or three single community pillars of large public companies that employ a lot of people. So we have a very big service industry, particularly within professional services, legal, accounting, financial services. But we also have a very diverse healthcare business. There was a cast off of a company that had been kind of the kingpin of the city back in the 80s and 90s. So the economy is palpably very, very resilient.
All right, we're going to leave it there. Hey, Doug, always fun to check in with you. Doug Scioka is CEO and partner at Kavar Capital Partners, as we said, over $1 billion in assets under management, based in Leawood, Kansas, and joining us via Zoom from there. Doug, take care. Good to talk with you.